This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 231 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuddersincpodcast.com. And joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Yeah, you know, I'm all right. It was a bit of a soul-searching week, to be honest with you, Bruce.
Oh, why is that?
Well, I haven't told many people this, and I haven't even told my wife. So it's like if she hears me talking about this through the doorway, it'll be news to her too. But I've been thinking of changing careers.
Really?
And quitting, closing down creative photo workshops, and actually leaving photography altogether.
Right. Right.
And my thoughts had been, probably over the last 2 weeks, I'd say, I've been sort of gaining momentum.
Yeah.
And then 2 days ago, I had a fairly serious setback.
Okay.
The tap started dripping again, Bruce.
Oh, no.
I was going to become a plumber. I was going to give it all up and become the guy who changes the washers and the taps. You know?
Oh, no.
It just started leaking and I can't get it to stop.
Oh, dear.
Excuse me, I've got a couple of tears here to wipe away. So, it looks like I'm back in photography again, so I better do the podcast.
Well, that's a good thing.
It's been a bit of a week. Been a bit emotional. A bit of a roller coaster.
Very, very traumatic.
You hit those highs, you walk tall for just a little while, and then, it's karma, isn't it? It's going to come back and bite you on the ass.
What are you going to do with that set of adjustable spanners now?
I know, I've got four or five. And there's my daughter washing her teeth, doing her teeth tonight in the bathroom. She goes, "Daddy, this tap doesn't stop dripping." I said, "I know, don't have to rub it in." 6-year-olds are cruel. Absolutely. She just likes like sandpaper into a wound. So I'm back into photography full time as of today.
Good stuff.
It's just I'm kind of glad I didn't tell anybody now, to be honest with you.
I can understand that.
Very lucky. And how's your week been?
Mate, not too bad. Fairly uneventful. Although I did some personal photography over the weekend. It was kind of successful, but kind of not successful. I was having a crack at something I'd never tried before, which was the idea of light painting a subject from multiple angles.
Nice.
In this particular instance, it was my motorcycle, which I had, just finished polishing up, as I do once a week. So it was all nice and shiny and sparkly, and I thought, I'm going to have a crack at that. I'm going to set the camera up on the tripod, and because I've got the trigger trap now, so I set it on intervalometer to just take an image about every 5 seconds, and set it on manual focus and 100 ISO, and set it on 200th and f/11 in a reasonably, not dark, but dark enough that the ambient wasn't going to play a part. Garage.
Yeah.
And then just had my, my flash wave triggers, attached to my flash, and I basically walked all around the bike and, had the flash wound down to about half power and just let it crank away for about 40 or 50 frames while I just worked the flash around the bike from every different angle, hoping that I was filling in every shadow.
Yeah.
And then, once I had done all of that, I figured, okay, I've got all of the shots now. So I should have all of the source material that I need to create that sort of, highly sort of stylized product look that you see when you look at a brochure for a motor car or a motorcycle or whatever, so I came back upstairs and I imported all of my images.
I'm feeling a bit of a letdown coming through.
I imported all the images into Lightroom, and everything looked exactly the way I thought it should have looked, Every frame there was just this little splash of light here or there that, was just lighting up one part of the bike, and you know, and you know, I could see that over the course of all of these, you know, 40 odd images, it looked like I'd pretty much covered everything. And so then what I did, because, you know, naturally I shot in RAW, I then created a JPEG of every image, because I figured, you know, I've got to drag 40 odd images into Lightroom. I don't want to be dragging in RAW images. I'll just, you know, create a JPEG with no alteration whatsoever from the RAW file. So created all these JPEGs, opened up Photoshop, went to, you know, Actions and Photo Merge and said, just, you know, bring in all of these photos. And first of all, I left the box that said blend images checked, and let Photoshop have a crack at it. It completely misunderstood what I was trying to do.
Yeah, that's what Photoshop does.
So I went through and...
If it was easy, Bruce, everyone would be doing
it. Yeah, exactly. So I went through every single layer and filled the layer mask with black. So I basically obliterated every part of every image from showing through. So eventually when I finished the last layer, I was just looking at a white canvas. I was looking at the checkerboard background. And then what I did was I started with the base image, the one at the very bottom of the stack.
They call that the base image, yes.
Yes. And,
or often sometimes referred to as the first image.
Yes.
So, layer one, I've heard it referred to as well. Actually.
Sometimes even layer zero. But anyway, let's not get into semantics.
No religion here, Bruce. No,
that's right. So what I then did was I inverted that mask. So I made the mask in completely white so that the whole image shone through.
Yeah.
And then what I did was I would go to the next layer above it and fill that with white. So then that layer became completely visible and what was below it was invisible.
Yeah.
And then what I started doing was painting over the area of that layer that I wanted to appear in the final image. So by painting over it with black, it actually disappeared. And once I got sort of rid of the bit that I thought I actually wanted, I then inverted the mask, which then brought that bit back and got rid of everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went through this process through, you know, 40 odd layers of just, you know, making the whole thing visible, paint over the bit that I wanted to keep, which would then disappear, then invert the mask and blah, blah, blah. And I wasn't entirely happy with the result. It kind of looked a bit wishy-washy. So obviously there was something in my post-processing teak that was absolutely not the correct way of doing it, and I'm sure you're probably going to tell me in about 2 seconds flat the right way to do it.
To me, the simplest way to do it, rather than that convoluted waste of time you've just been doing...
Right.
God almighty. Name your images 1 to 40. Let's say you got 40.
Okay.
So we'll start with 1, go all the way through to 40. 1's your base image. There you go. You drop that down. You import number 2, mask it out, and just paint in just a tiny bit of light over the base image. Okay, number 2, paint, number 3, paint, number 4, paint, number 5, paint.
Are you saying put in a medium grey on the mask?
No, put the image there, mask it out, fill with black, so it disappears completely, and then just paint over that little bit where you know the light is, on that little segment of the bike, so your base image, basically just painting in that little bit of light on that base image. Then you do the same with the next one, and the same with the next one, and the same with the next one.
Right.
So there's not all this inverting, reverting, upverting, downverting, converting.
Well,
it's just perverting.
So looking at the final image that I came up with,
did you start with a base image? Did you have a base image that you started off with?
Not.
That's often a good thing to have. Have the starting image, even if there's light on that image.
Right.
So you can see it. You've got your image. Yeah. Like if I was doing one of these, I'd normally get there and shoot. Say I'm doing a building at night.
Mm-hmm.
I'd get there just before evening, so I've got maybe a bit of sky that I might want to use. Maybe a bit of sunset.
Yep.
But form a base image that I'm going to paint the light on top of.
Right.
And that way it's just slowly build and build and build. And I also grid, so let's say I'll draw out a grid. You know, I'll kind of do a sketch of the image before I start shooting.
Oh, yeah.
I'll do a whole little grid. So I'll go through and tick every box as I've done. Because in the middle of the night, if you're doing 200 images, which is not unheard of,
yep.
you forget what you've done.
Yeah, right.
So you've got to work it. You know, it's like, you know, going mining, you know, using metal detectors and look for the gold. You've got to grid stuff out and block it and work it one segment at a time to make sure you've covered everything you want to cover. And then you just add those squares one at a time in Photoshop. And you just slowly paint that little bit of light that's in each image onto your base image.
Okay.
So Eric Curry is your man.
Right.
Yes, I think right.
You have mentioned him before. So I will need to...
AmericanPrideAndPassion.com.
That's right. Go.
And he will blow your socks off.
Right.
I'm looking at his site right now. He's got a new e-book available. It's called Crafting Reality, Painting with Light, where he goes through his entire technique. But he does have some great YouTube videos that are really worthwhile watching, and this guy just blow everyone's socks off.
Oh, yes, I'm looking at his images now. Yes, this is the guy. Yes, I've seen this guy's images before. They are amazing. Yeah. I mean, they are very
simple techniques.
They are very over the top, and they kind of reek of the whole HDR pixel vomit thing in a different kind of way.
Yeah. They have a look, but I mean, of course, it's your choice as to how.
Yeah, it's a highly stylized.
You want to make that look, but of course, it's the actual technique of how he lights it.
Yeah,
is the important bit, and the technique of how he layers it, not necessarily how he post processes or the hyper reality that he creates.
Yep.
I mean, he's got very much a movie poster kind of look, like a 50s yes. movie poster. It has a very different feel. But the same technique is just as effective on... So he's got video tutorials on his site for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. See, I can count 8. For eight different shots that he's done.
Cool.
So
it's definitely... I'll have to check those out.
It's inspiring. Even if you're never going to do it, just to watch what people are doing with photography, it is inspiring to watch this guy.
Yeah, so, right.
Yeah. Maybe we should get him on the podcast one day.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I can reach out to him and say, hey, we've spoken about you a couple of times. Come on and have a chat.
Absolutely.
So a couple of things have popped up on the Facebook wall.
Oh, they don't leave us alone, do they?
Adam Davidson said, you've only got 5 listeners now. Hopefully one of them has got some questions for you to answer on the podcast.
Well, if thanks, he's not Adam. Listening, why is he reading their Facebook page?
Exactly.
Go away, Adam.
And Belinda Edwards said, it's 4 now. I accidentally listened to the podcast on double speed. I'm still recovering. Glenn sounded like an Ewok from Star Wars.
Who's Glenn? Do we have a special guest?
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, got my name wrong. Yeah, I only get majorly insulted when people do that. No, I don't. when you have an odd spelling, that's good. Easy for me to say, isn't it? When your name's spelled strange, you're used to people calling you all sorts of things. And some of the things people call me is unbelievable, Bruce.
Yep.
A lot of people expect me to be a woman, which is always kind of amusing. It's like, oh, we're expecting a lady. It's only on my weekends.
The funny thing is, when I mix this podcast, or when I'm editing this podcast...
You think I'm a lady too?
Well, no, but I... I'm not going there. I actually edit it in at 1.5 speed.
Really?
Yeah, just to reduce the pain, yeah.
Just listen with one ear too. That'll cut down half of it.
Of course, yeah. Oh, dear.
I went a bit nuts this week.
Oh, yeah?
I did. I blogged twice.
Oh, my goodness.
Nigh on unheard of. Well, it's a totally unheard of. It's the first in my life career to blog twice. So
yeah, right.
if anyone can... handle any more of me. My website, couple of little bloggy bits there.
So what created the desire to become such a prolific blogger?
I had such fun shooting my 86-year-old Chinese guy.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to write about it.
Right, okay.
And I like the images, which is, unusual somewhat for me to actually like my images. We all are our own worst critics, and I sort of put up with my images a lot of the time as opposed to really like them, and I really like some of the shots we got of Peter, and so that got me inspired, and I thought, well, you know, I better write about this KL night I did too, just to talk about the quandaries of shooting and trying to set up a studio up in a 5-foot by 6-foot space and all the dramas that so I wrote about that too.
Choice.
I'm tempted. I just did a workshop in Ocean Grove this last Sunday, a couple of days ago.
Right.
And it was a pig of a day. It was overcast and cold and windy and showery, and the light was non-existent, and we were shooting in a location that was just horrible. There was nowhere to shoot that was any good. So it was challenging, quite challenging indeed. But we had some fun and we got some good shots and we learned some stuff. Well, they learned some stuff. And it reaffirmed that you can take good photographs in just the most diabolically bad days and still in locations. I mean, we're talking, we shot basically in a strip mall of shops.
Right.
But they're an old, they're not the good old rundown, they're just the old rundown look. Right. So, and there's been, there's construction stuff going on, and they said the light was non-existent, and so it was a challenging day. So I might blog about that this week.
Right.
Cool. I'm going crazy three times in 2 weeks. Poor website's probably going to have a meltdown. It stopped working one day last week.
Yeah, crashed the server. Well, I came across a very interesting article through the week. Does the name Sean Parker ring any bells for you?
He's the guy who founded Napster, isn't he?
He is. That's
right. Do you
know
how I know that?
Yeah.
Do you know how I know that?
How do you know that?
He told me that before the show started.
That's right. He also was instrumental in helping Zuckerberg get Facebook up and running.
Yes. He owned about a third of Facebook or something.
Yes.
And I saw that from the movie, whatever it
was.
That's
right. Yeah, The Social Network.
That's the one.
Yeah, he was played by Justin Timberlake in the movie.
That's
interesting. Well, Sean Parker just got married. And he got married, what was the girl's name? Alexandra Linus. And these guys, obviously had some money to splash around on the wedding. Both loved old forests. And they were sort of inspired by Tolkien. And they had their guests all fitted out, all 364 of them, in Tolkien inspired, like Lord of the Rings inspired costumes, and had this wedding in these, beautiful redwood forests in California. And I'll post a couple of links in the show notes. The photos are just, the setting was amazing.
Yeah. Because, good photography is all about locations.
That's right. just for anyone who's interested in it,
they are stunning photos.
Yeah,
but I've got to almost maybe side with one of his other counterparts in the online media in this situation, though. I'm speaking more specifically of the CEO of Yahoo. Yeah, right. Where she said, "Look, photographers, look there. What's a pro photographer these days? I mean, they're not really an important. Everyone's got a
Marissa
camera.
Meyer.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's got a camera. The photos that this person's pulled up of this, this little foresty little picnic thing they had with a wedding attached to it. That could have been done with an iPhone. Bland, boring. Who needs professional photographers? Anyone could have done that.
Was that good?
Sure, they might have lucked out a few angles and kind of got lucky with a few of the shots there, but they've done all right. Man. But that's sort of high end work. Yeah, and once again, I'm talking about someone like Eric Curry before. That sort of high end, visualization and work is astounding. And how anyone can put a photographer into that mix of just because I've got a camera, I'm a photographer.
Yeah.
Bloody CEOs of I'm almost tempted to take my 7,000 photos down off Flickr.
That'll show her.
It'll really make an impact on the 27 billion they've got on there. I have to keep Flickr going because I've lost some of the photos. I don't know where they are, but they're only on Flickr.
So. Oh, really?
I don't know. You've got to search and find the things. They're years old. Dear. No, but those definitely put those in Vanity Fair and a few other places. Definitely put that link up because those photos are stunning.
Yes.
Stunning.
They will be in the show notes for anyone that wants to check them out. I'd recommend having a look at them. They're pretty, certainly different. It's not the sort of wedding photos you see all the time.
No, it's not your Frankston RSL or anything like that.
No, it's not. Now, last week, we started to talk about an email that I received from Greg Anderson, and then I said, oh, no, we've already covered this. And then after that episode went public, I got an email from Greg saying, no, I don't think you guys actually covered that on the podcast. And so I went back over the last couple of episodes that had been produced since his original email had come in, and I could find no reference to it whatsoever. So all I can imagine is that I actually read the email to myself when it came in, and hence why last week when I went to cover it, I looked at it and went, oh, no, I've already done this.
Done.
But it hadn't actually been covered, so we will cover it. And if I have miraculously overlooked the fact that we did actually cover it, then my apologies for covering it again. So this came in from Greg Anderson on the 30th of June.
Haven't we covered that?
Possibly.
Possibly. Sounds very familiar.
So we're going to make sure that we've covered it again. Okay. So he said,
so what's he chatting about? What's he writing
he
about?
He says, a couple of things. First, I was going to send a question and comment about HDR photography, but you covered the topic before I got around to asking you what you thought of it overall. I figured that the powers behind Shutters Inc. podcast wouldn't be very interested in HDR.
I still got to disagree. I've got no problem with HDR. I really don't. I've got a problem with bad HDR.
Yeah, absolutely.
Photography is an art form. You do what you like. You do what makes you happy. Yep. You do what gives you pleasure. Yep. If you like it, do it. If you don't like it, find something you do like.
Absolutely. And I would agree with all of that. Yeah. My issue with HDR is that... Yeah. I see very little of it that is done subtly.
Yeah.
You know, there's something.
Well, it's not,
about...
not one of my strengths, so all that video over tucked up kind of fits in okay for me.
There have been rare occasions where I've seen something and gone, yep, it's been done just enough that it's achieved a result better than you could have got out of a single image, but not overdone to the point where it calls attention to itself. And that's for my personal, you know, aesthetic on it. That's where I prefer it to be. And obviously, there are guys like Trey who love it at the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, I just think there's times and places where a simple two image shot blended,
yes,
is probably going to give you a better result. So, say a sunset where you want, you know, some foreground detail.
Yep.
Maybe if you can just keep it just two images, one exposed for the sky, one for the ground, and just blend those two. So neither the top or the bottom part of the image is actually being adjusted particularly so. They're just being merged together.
Yep.
You know, there's no tonal contrast or all that kind of stuff being applied to it. It's just a simple merge.
Mm-hmm.
Then that I think that should be maybe the first port of call.
Yep.
For keeping what we see with our eye a little bit better, and then it's in those situations where you really need to push that dynamic range, and then there's spaces to add a third and fourth, fifth, sixth, 14th image,
so
to that range, the old keep it simple, stupid rules always applies to everything, but if you like doing it, and you're happy with whatever results are that are coming out of it, then cool.
Yeah. Anyway, so he goes on. Over the years, to find the light and put them in it, and to strive for a photo that looks good straight out of the camera with little or no post-processing.
Yeah.
Like, I believe there was an objective to be able to use the JPEG file as is, even if you shot RAW and JPEG simultaneously, because
Absolutely.
That meant you really knew what you were doing, you didn't need to fix it later. So the idea of HDR photography seemed unappealing. After all, the best examples I see online of HDR photography are usually showing off the extreme abstract look of those images, which what we've just been talking about. I understand how great it is to shoot RAW and then to recover highlight details or to bring out shadow details that were otherwise lost, but HDR is taken to such extremes that I'm rarely impressed. It seems like no photographic skills were used and instead the computer did all the work and that the computer has no sense of artistry. I'd agree with that.
But this is some incredibly composed image, great compositions,
sure,
and then blown out of the water by the over-the-top HDR, but the actual visualization of the image has been exceptionally good. It's just what they've done with it afterwards is maybe not as appealing as it could have been, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying to be, for me, for once, trying to be subtle and slightly polite.
Mm. Plus, the idea that it's called high dynamic range photography seems wrong. To me, this is the visual equivalent of what's known in the audio world as the loudness war. Bruce will know what that means. Essentially, with audio processing, you can crush the dynamic range of a song, for example, by cranking up the quieter details so that every element of the music is just loud. Isn't HDR doing the same thing visually, and therefore, isn't it best to call it low dynamic range processing? That's an interesting interesting idea that it is. It's compressing the dynamic range rather than extending it.
Well, it has to be extended because it's including more lights and darks.
Yeah.
Yeah, so therefore it's a higher...
But what Greg's saying is that you are taking a wider range of tonal values and compressing them into
a narrower
window. Yeah, in order to be, you know, represented across an 8-bit JPEG. So I can kind of understand where he's going with it. Anyway, interesting.
Maybe they could just change it to PVI instead of HDR.
Okay.
Yeah, pixel vomit imaging.
I like it.
we're just going to call it that, or yeah. I'm doing a Google search right now I'm going to pull out some fantastic HDR images and cool. links them. And as soon as I've only been through about 12,000 now, when I go through one and find a good one, well, there's one of mine. Look at that. I won't put that one in either. I've only been through 12,000. I haven't gotten it yet. But when I get there.
In the meantime, I shall continue with Greg's email.
Oh, you keep talking.
Yeah. Second topic, keywords in Lightroom. I don't remember if there's a default smart collection folder called without keywords or if I created it myself, but I found it very useful. The smart collection rule is simply that keywords are empty, and then this automatically shows me all of the photos that have no keywords assigned. Even if I neglected to add keywords at the time I imported the images, I can easily go back later and discover which images were never given keywords. So if, for example, I have some spare time and I just want to spend a few minutes reviewing this list, I can work at adding keywords for just a few minutes. As I add keywords, the collection automatically shrinks. If I don't finish the process all at once, it's okay, I can work on the rest later. Like Bruce, I started using Lightroom when I'd already taken thousands of digital photos. Now all of those photos are in Lightroom. By spending just a few minutes now and then adding keywords to my oldest photos, I was able to easily catch up over a few months without feeling overwhelmed at the idea of using the keyword functions. Now I can concentrate on smart collections that contain keywords like landscape, sunrise, family, cars, etc., and even use multiple rules for things like pictures of cars that are also rated at 4 stars and above. I love smart collections. So that was the email from Greg Anderson, and I thought that is a great idea, creating a smart collection where the rule is if, you know, only include the image in the smart collection if it has no keywords.
Yeah.
And so then as you add your keywords to the image, it then disappears from that smart collection. That's a great idea.
That's certainly a great way of getting rid of all that backlog. Absolutely. Sounds a great idea.
Yeah.
Very smart.
So I think I shall be employing that one. Greg, thank you, mate. That's a great tip.
Yeah. Well, once again, we'd like to apologise to the rest of our listeners if we actually gave out something useful during this episode.
Unintentional.
Fortunately, it didn't come from either of us. So. Therefore... the onus is not on us. Yeah. But that's super smart. If you're stuck with that Herculean task of 20,000 images sitting there, it's always something you're going to put off.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
You can't find a simple way of doing it. And that sounds like a logical, simple way to do it.
Yeah, definitely.
I've got into a little bit into the old film versus digital debate today on the internet.
Oh, really?
With a friend of mine who makes film cameras.
Yeah.
So it wasn't actually him I was in the debate, but it was one of his
Facebook
followers. It's Dean Jones from Razzle.com.
Hey, Dean.
So he makes some phenomenal cameras. And he was putting some images up of some artists he'd shot at Motzelvat, which is an artist colony here in Victoria.
Beautiful Funny place. You should mention that. It was on MasterChef tonight.
Really? Dean Jones's camera?
No. sponsor that.
Oh, see what I did there? That was great. Anyway, so he's put this image up there, and you know, and all the typical film neophytes. Oh, you know, because it's film, it's awesome. Oh, if, you know, what I find with these people who are really, really, really over the top about film,
yeah,
shooting with film, is that they seem to elevate ordinary photographs into works of art simply because they're shot on film,
right?
Or simply because they actually took photos with film. As opposed, and then they denigrate anything shot with digital because it wasn't shot on film. Yeah. And so what I see often, this is not necessarily Dean's portfolio I'm talking about, but I see other works out there, and I've seen from people who run workshops based only around film, that I see stacks of extraordinarily ordinary images that for some reason, as I said, that they get elevated to this artistic status simply because it was shot on film, yep, rather than digital. Because there was some magic in the process of, you know, dunking a bit of celluloid into celluloid.
That's one way to give it another celluloid,
isn't it? Dunking an acid. Same thing will be gone in no time. Yeah, don't worry about the smell there, mate. Into a bit of chemicals, anyway. And therefore, that is a majestic, magical process that transforms mediocrity. And it doesn't.
No.
So Dean put up an image.
Yeah.
It had some very ordinary and not at all flattering light on a lady's face.
Right.
And so I made the comment, because he'd made, couldn't have done this on film. They were on digital. They were all saying this stuff, blah blah. Oh, thank God I shot on film and all this sort of stuff. So I made the comment. Well, of course, if you had shot this on digital, you would have seen how bad the lighting is on the face, and would have shot it again. Ever the subtle person that I am.
Right.
And so, of course, it comes back with the comment comes back with, sour grapes, it sounds like. Looks like someone overinvested in their digital equipment.
Oh.
Yes. Oh, so the fact that I'm jealous that someone's done this image with film because I've only got digital. And I happen to have some film stuff, so it's, you know, I'm not anti-film. But yeah, here's the thing. There's this image and had, you know, two very bad pieces of light on the face. One that was getting this big hot spot on the end of the nose.
Right.
Because the whole lady's face was very flat lit. It was lit, right, very, very dull, very flat. But then it had this hot spot of light on the end of the nose.
Okay.
And there's kind of L-shaped, kind of jaggedy bit of light going up a cheekbone. Yeah, extremely distracting and unflattering, both of them.
Right.
And so I came back with, well, you know, yeah, just because it's shot in film, people, yeah, don't mean it's a work of art. And I think, and Dean, I think we have a mutual respect for each other that, you know, he wouldn't be taking it personally that I'll be saying this about his images.
Right.
And so I pointed out the fact that, you know, if you talk to a painter and you said, you know, what's the best way to paint something? Is it only with acrylics or only with oils? They'd say, mm-hmm, yeah, well, whatever's needed.
Yep.
You know, whichever suited the image better, whichever had the right feel, whichever you know, felt right at the time. And at the end of the day, if you walk around an art gallery and look at paintings on the wall, you don't go, oh, that painting's not bad, but it'd be awesome if it was in oil. They've done that in oil, that would be, you know, oh, because it's acrylic, it's it's cheap and nasty, you know. There's that whole,
yeah,
that whole feel about, you know, really
elitism.
Something shot with digital versus, you know, because I grew up with film, so it's nothing special.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up, you know, selling stuff and using stuff every day.
Dean did as well.
Exactly. But not necessarily all the people who comment do.
Oh, okay, right.
Because they, no, and got Dean, I mean, I'm, yeah, Dean, I respect incredibly for the stuff he does with building and making cameras. I'd love to own one of his cameras.
Yeah.
So don't mean that it's not sour grapes because I've overinvested in my digital. It's just simply the fact that, you know, I don't care what it's shot on.
Yeah.
I don't care what paintbrush you used. I don't care whether you painted oil or acrylic. Do I like the picture?
Mm-hmm.
Do I like the painting? Is the painting pleasing or does it stuff that I don't like? And it's, yep, only an opinion, of course.
Absolutely.
But when I see, but when I look at the photograph, and I'm going to say, well, you know, yeah, it's a problem with it to my eye. Yeah, and I think I've got a fair idea about how to light stuff.
Yeah.
You know. Yes. So yeah, I've got, I don't want to come across as a bit of a, you know, tosser, but I know how to use natural light pretty damn well. You know, I'm pretty good at it.
Yeah.
And, I see light in it. Of course, I see it the way I like to see it. Not saying it's the only way to see it. I see.
No, but when it's subjective.
When I see something on an image that, you know, a little turn of the face to the left or right would have completely fixed it and transformed the image.
Right.
Then, you know, that has to be mentioned, especially someone who you have a good rapport with anyway, and they wouldn't take it personally. You can point out that to them, as I'd expect them to point it out to me. What the hell did you do that for? You know, what's that pole coming out of the head for, Glenn? that kind of stuff. But what struck me so much was this. This elitism that film is the only way to shoot.
Mm.
That's just a crock. No. Yeah. Sorry for we might have lost another of our listeners. But I just don't see where the transcendence. Of course, it has a different feel. It has a different look. It has a different dynamic range. Absolutely. And they're its strengths. But digital has its strengths too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But simply, if you can only say the photo's good because of the medium it was shot on, that's just codswallop.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's the image itself. It's not how it was executed.
Especially if you're going to go and then digitize that film and put up on Facebook. It's going to lose some of that ethereal feel anyway, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Yes. Because, I mean, 100 years from now, no one's going to care what it was shot on.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, you look at, oh, is that a daguerreotype? Yeah. Look at the image. We don't really care about the media. And I said, look. There's a gent next to my, who has a little space next to my studio in Collingwood, who shoots 8x10 plate film.
Right.
They're all power to him. Wonderful, incredible stuff. And there's a place in Sydney called Studio 1A, which do some amazing stuff, in some wet plate shooting and things. Yeah. So there's incredibly cool stuff out there. So, I mean, I'm not being a snob as far as, because it's film, it's old hat, because I think it's awesome. But the photo's still got to be good.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, to make the photo work is not because I shot it on a camera that has a piece of acetate inside it or whatever, you know.
I want to see them do the spray and pray method of shooting a wedding with a wet plate.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck with that, people. Yes, we're taking 3 photos of your wedding.
Value them highly.
That's it. Oh dear. And one of them won't be very good. So fix it. Oh, you blinked. Look at that. Yeah, we fix him in the Photoshop. So that was my little experience and little rant about film v digital, and it's the same but different argument I see all the time about full-frame camera versus crop-sensor camera bullshit. Oh, excuse the English.
Yeah.
And I have this debate with customers on a sort of like a bi-weekly basis about the ridiculousness of the whole concept.
Right.
You know? If you go, I've got a full-frame camera, so I'm a better photographer. You know, my photos are better because I've got a full-frame camera. My photos are better because I shoot film. Yeah, rubbish. What's the photo like?
Yeah.
Show me the photo.
Yeah.
If it's a good photo, it's a good photo. Doesn't really matter what it's shot on. You shot it with your iPhone and it's corker? Good job. Well done, you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not a huge snob. But, I mean, this concept of full frame does do my head in a bit, I've got to say. Yeah. Call it what it is. It's a 35mm sensor or it's an APS-C size sensor. Because my iPhone's a full frame camera.
Okay.
You know that? My iPhone. It is. It's a full frame camera because the lens that's on the iPhone throws the light fully on the frame of the sensor.
That's right.
It covers the sensor edge to edge to edge to edge. There's no overlap. There's no miss. It's a full frame camera. It's a tiny bloody frame.
Yeah. Exactly.
I always pull it out whenever people start talking. I always pull my iPhone out and say, well, this is my full frame camera.
At the end of the day, someone who knows what they're doing with an APS-C sensor could produce a much better image than someone who doesn't know what they're doing with a 35mm frame in a DSLR.
And as I said, you see someone who pulls out a camera that shoots 6.6 or the guy next door who shoots 8.10.
Yeah,
they'll laugh at your puny 35mm sensor. You call that a sensor? Look at this.
You think that's a full frame?
That a sensor? Now that's a sensor.
That's it. So
I see that very much in the same vein as film versus digital, sensor size wars.
Yeah.
Maybe that could be a movie, Sensor Wars. The APS-C versus the full-frame 35mm sensors.
That's going to be a riveting screenplay.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be dreaming about that one tonight.
Now, as you know, while I was in Borneo,
yes,
I elected not to take my laptop.
Instead,
I took my Samsung Galaxy Tab, and I used that for importing my images and image backup and all that sort of stuff. And lo and behold, I should happen to be browsing my regular photography feeds, through the week, and I came across an article on DIYphotography.net by a guy called Vlad Dedenko from Chicago, and he has written a post for DIY Photography all about him doing exactly the same thing. He went traveling and decided not to take his laptop. He instead took a Nexus 10 tablet. But unlike me, he's gone and written this massive long post and outlined all of the tech that he bought that, with adapters and card readers and, the apps that he used and all that sort of stuff, and turned it into quite an informative blog post. So I thought I'll throw that into the show notes for anyone that wants to have a look at it. Because it, like I said, it certainly did the job for me, and it saved me, having to lug around a very heavy 17-inch laptop everywhere. So, yeah.
Nice. No, that'd be good reading. That I'd like. I might even read that myself.
Yeah. Well.
Can you email me the link? Because I won't read the show notes.
No, of course you won't.
that'd be almost as bad as listening to the podcast.
So.
But speaking of travel.
Right.
Because, you kind of almost did a bit there. You mentioned the word Borneo.
Yeah.
Did I mention me and Mike Holman were going to the US?
No.
Well, me and Mike Holman were going to the US.
Oh, but not now?
Well, we're supposed to be doing... he was going to come with me to one of my workshop tours and come and do some stuff in Pennsylvania, New York and Los Angeles with me.
Right.
And it's all scheduled, all planned, and then his poor wife went to the docs and she's going to have an operation the week we're traveling.
Oh, no.
with a fair few weeks recovery time post that. So... So I may still go by myself, but that's kind of a bit of a kibosh on him, unfortunately.
Yeah, what a shame!
Bit of a disappointment. But we'll try and do that again with him in April, maybe, and we can come on my next tour and do that. Would be kind of good. And I finally get into India.
Oh, cool!
Finally.
Just quickly, I would like to say best wishes to Viv, and hope that the operation goes well and whatever it is.
I think she's having mic removed. No, it's surgical thing. Yeah. It's obviously no idea actually what's going on, but all power to her. I'm assured it's nothing particularly serious. It's just something needs doing. And I've been babysitting my best mate all week this week, and which is not very long because it's only Tuesday.
Right.
Because I had an operation last week, and he's bedridden for about 6 weeks. The poor bugger.
Oh right.
So I'm actually sitting up office at his house every day for the next 6 weeks.
Oh really?
To keep an eye on him. So wow. Give him a bit of company too, which of course is important.
Yeah. So tell us about India.
So I finally got all my scheduling has just not really allowed me to get over when I want. I'm only looking for a 4 or 5 day window, which is not very long.
Yep.
And you'd be surprised how hard it is to find a 4 to 5 day window. But I finally got one early November. So just when I get back from the US and just before I go off somewhere else, I'm going to go to India. And it happens to coincide with the Diwali festival.
Oh, wow.
Which is all their lighting and fireworks and stuff, which will be pretty darn cool. So not for nighttime shots, it's going to add an extra element to the whole trip, which is good. So
nice.
I'm gonna pop over there for, haven't quite exactly decided yet, probably 5 days, 5.5 days, something like that.
Awesome.
And go over there and shoot the living daylights out of it for 5 days.
Cool.
And I'll keep you posted as that develops over the next month or so, and as it gets closer.
Yeah.
And then we can maybe depending on what the time difference, maybe I can do a call in from India for our podcast.
Oh, okay. Yep.
I'll be over there on a Tuesday night, and maybe we can do that. Something a bit different.
Yeah. Okay.
And one other thing we had a little email discussion this week with the lovely Carl Hemmings.
Yes.
I have to say lovely because
you mean Facebook exchange?
Yeah, was it Facebook? Was it?
Yes.
Okay, that too.
Yeah.
we chatted recently about brackets for your camera for landscape shooting.
L brackets.
L brackets, like not L McPherson, L brackets.
Yes. And?
Oh, no, I thought you knew something about them. Oh. It'd be
interesting. You know, I was thinking you were going to run with it.
No, the pressure on you, dude. Yeah. I talk way too much in this podcast as
Carl,
it is.
Carl Hemmings came back on the Facebook wall after in the show notes for the last week's episode because I'd posted the link to the video that he'd sent us about this Black Rapid / Arca Swiss hybrid sort of safety strap. And the reason that Carl had brought this to my attention was because this guy had used an L bracket, and, you know, Carl assumed that I would use an L bracket because I love shooting panoramas. And he mentioned as such, and I went, well, actually, I've not ever bought an L bracket. I've always shot without them. So, yeah, a bit of a discussion ensued regarding L brackets and the quality thereof and the weight thereof.
And that amazingly wonderful company from the US called Really Right Stuff, which do make some awesome gear, but as Carl quite rightly points out, a touch expensive.
Right.
Yeah. You know? But, yeah, specialist stuff for small markets tends to be that way, I guess, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we may feel that photography is such a huge industry, but in reality, compared to a lot of industries, it's pretty small. So the market for this sort of stuff is going to be small. And
yep.
That, of course, makes stuff expensive. But, they are. I know majority of the people I train in the US all seem to have these bloody brackets on their cameras.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it just seems to be like, it's like someone's done a great sales job. It's like, it just seems like, but especially in LA, it's like every customer who walks in the door, they've all got one at the bottom of the camera.
Yeah, you know? Right.
And it's like, oh, fair enough. Yeah, if you're doing that sort of shooting, I don't even know if half of them even know what the real value of them actually is. They've just got them.
Right.
I mean, the nicest possible way, if they're listening.
Yeah.
But look, I'd love to have one. I don't even shoot lands because remember, as the post quite rightly said, you know, addressing this to the landscape guy, and I shoot an odd landscape. I'm not, a fairly odd landscape. I'm not solely a purple photographer. I pretty much am. You're right.
Yeah.
I'll show you some kick-ass landscapes when I come back from India. There we go.
Yeah.
And of course, then we've got our landscape event in New Zealand with Mike next year as well. Actually, in April, which will be very cool.
That'll be autumn.
Autumn
colours.
Late April. And what we were going to be putting on in the US, which we'll be probably putting off for next year, we're putting on a landscape masterclass over 3 days.
Wow.
Which was going to be a first over. So there's two events we're going to be running over there for the first time. One was that, the landscape masterclass, run by him, and we'll probably do something similar to that in New Zealand as well. And also we're going to be, and probably bring them out here in Australia as well this year, is nighttime photography walks using LED panels for lighting.
Oh, nice.
So constant LED lighting as our light source, because, you know, obviously being a constant light allows people to visualize and
exactly what the light's doing.
Exactly, and get it. And also means more than one person can shoot at a time, which is not always possible with flash. So that's going to be a new little thing we're going to be running this summer, which will be kind of cool.
Mm.
So stay. I just got to find a lighting sponsor for LED panels.
Well, you can talk to the guys at Dragon Image because they carry a bunch of light panels.
They do. I'll be going to.
But you'd be going to straight back to the wholesale, like to the manufacturer, wouldn't you?
Usually best, rather than a retailer, because I'd rather talk about the product rather than trying to say you have to go to store X or whatever. I'd rather.
Yeah.
But so I'll be probably pimping myself out at the PMA show here in
Melbourne
in September. Yeah.
Nice.
Which I'm doing. If anyone's out there and listening, I'm doing a talk on Saturday and a talk on Sunday.
What are the dates? Flash.
That's a good question.
Okay.
It's either like the let me pull up a calendar here. Hang on a sec. It's either like the 14, 15, or something else completely different. And now for something completely different. I think it's the 14th and 15th of September.
Okay, cool.
And on the 14th, I'm doing a talk on street portraiture versus street photography. So, doing a comparison, talking about the the differences between the two.
Yep.
Because I'm a street portrait shooter more than a street photographer, which is a different, very different genre. And on the Sunday, talking about flash photography, so that'll be kind of fun. So if you're in Melbourne and nothing else to do and you haven't heard enough of my voice. So that's my stuff for the week, my friend.
Excellent. I'd say the only thing to add, given that we were talking about Mike, would be to congratulate Mike on plethora of awards that he picked up at the New
Not
Zealand.
Not only that, he got a lot of them as well.
He did.
That's a plethora and a lot.
I don't think anybody else got a look in. Yeah, Mike cleaned up, including picking up New Zealand Landscape Photographer of the Year.
Wasn't it? No, it was New Zealand Travel Photographer.
Travel Photographer of the Year. Yeah. And am I correct in thinking he's picked that up before?
We might have picked it up off the bench. We might have looked and put it back down. I don't think he's actually won it before.
Right, okay.
I think last year he won Auckland Photographer of the Year.
Right.
And he's won like gold, silver, you know,
yep.
Yeah. Puce awards before, but this year you got two gold, three.
You got
four,
a cup, one or two silver distinctions, plus a couple of silvers and a couple of bronze. I think
a bronze.
There was a bunch in there.
Yeah. So he also got his fellowship. I think it was of
That's
the
right. Yes.
Fellowship status for the New Zealand Institute of Professional Photography.
Yep.
And a bar to fellowship. Always been bar. It's not good, is it? not good at all. You've won too much awards. I'm afraid you can't come back.
Yeah, he's been barred. You need to lift your game, Mike.
That's right. He's a New Zealand Travel Photographer of the Year because he's probably the only New Zealander who travelled. Yeah, so two golds, three silver distinctions, two silver, three bronze, and four puce.
Wow. Well done, Mike. Well
done.
Yeah,
you got to say, you know, it's just, you know, fair degree of smart arseness right there, you'd have to say, wouldn't you? You know, think about it. You know, gee, I hate people with talent.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the other problem with Mike?
What's
he's
that?
A nice guy.
He is a nice guy.
You can't hate him as much as you want to because of his talent. You can't hate him. Well, we do got another thing on Facebook here now.
Right.
Other than Adam Davidson saying, if you don't stop it with useful info, you'll lose the rest of your listeners.
Yes.
So there's always that. But Belinda actually came up with something. Yeah, not smart arsey ones.
Right.
And I'm not sure what your thoughts are. I can't find that. You know, it's like you never find the thing you're looking for. She said, what if you set a challenge for our listeners photographically?
Okay.
For, say, three different levels of challenge.
Right.
Maybe we could think about this over the course of the week and maybe set something for next week. But, it's interesting, isn't it? Set somebody a photographic challenge.
Okay.
What do you think?
I like that idea of getting some content shot by our listeners and put up on the Shutterzing Podcast Facebook page.
Yes.
Just so we can see what each other are doing. And, yeah, I like the idea of...
You know what we should do?
Hmm.
For the very first one,
It's
got to be a selfie.
Okay.
Because then everyone gets to see what everyone looks like. You know,
that's a great idea.
It's got to be a selfie.
Okay.
So well,
why don't we make that a project for the coming week?
Yeah.
So between the Sunday when this episode goes up and, well, hopefully by the Tuesday night. So within that 48-hour period, some people will have shot and published their self-portrait on the Shutterzing Podcast Facebook page so that Glyn and I can at least then discuss it on the next episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you get to it after that, that's okay. We can discuss it the following week.
Yeah, I think so. So I think a selfie, and let's see, we'll set some
And that includes
some criteria
Glyn and I.
About, absolutely. Some criteria about what gear you're allowed to use.
Oh, is there a limit?
Well, you know, I like to be a little bit snobbish.
Okay.
And say...
it's got to be shot on film.
No film cameras allowed.
Right.
You see, I'm oversubscribed in my digital gear. But no, well, obviously, digital's going to make it a hell of a lot easier to get it done in the time frame too, you know?
Yes.
And so there we go. Selfies, people.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah,
and that doesn't have to be whole face.
No, it can be any way you like, but a self-portrait.
Think Picasso. Yeah, you're allowed to go and, you know, do a bit of image manipulation if you want. Just don't make yourself look like Brad Pitt, Adam. Yeah, you know? No one's going to believe that. And yeah, that'll be fun.
Cool. Okay.
Good on you, Belinda.
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
And I still haven't had any feedback from anybody with regards other links to tutorials on how to do HDR well. I'm very disappointed, people.
That's just there aren't any.
There we go.
I'm up to image 57,600 on Google image search so far, and still haven't got a good one yet.
Still looking.
That's my challenge for the week, other than a selfie. Yeah, I'm going to get there, dude.
Excellent. Well, if anyone else has got a source of HDR photography that doesn't look like pixel vomit, we'd love you to share it with us.
Yes.
So, yeah. Just to satisfy my tame end of the HDR spectrum, as opposed to Glyn's radical end of the HDR spectrum.
Yeah, and see if we can find somewhere in the middle that's a happy medium. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right, mate.
Did you hear?
Oh.
Just one last little thing. There was a jailbreak local. I've got a couple of jails near my house. Okay. And no, serious.
Yeah.
there's two ladies and a men's, I think, or two men's and a ladies, something like that. But I don't know. Can we say that? We don't know if we can say the word midget. A little person,
right?
Psychic escaped jail from around the corner.
I can
local newspaper headline. Feel small punch. Medium at large.
Nice.
Just, you know. It's a dad thing.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to say, it's been an hour talking to you, Bruce.
It has. It's an hour of my life I'll never get back.
Well, just think, on the benefits, on the good side of it, when you listen back at 1.5 times the speed...
It'll only take me 40 minutes.
Awesome.
Excellent. All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
And you also have a lovely week. And to all our, whatever's left of our listeners, yeah, we love you all.
We do.
But remember, selfies, we've got to prove you're out there.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, what happens if we get more than four? That's a challenge. Let's get into double figures of selfies. Not including our two.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think there's people out there. This could just be me wishful thinking.
Yep.
But I think we've got more than four.
I think there's a couple more there that just are lurking in the shadows.
There's the challenge, all you lurkers. Yeah. Get in touch. Yeah.
Yeah.
With people too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, mate. You have a good week.
Take care.
I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
All right.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email thevoice@shuttersincpodcast.com.